There is no such thing as a dull week in international relations. But for India, this week has begun in a particularly eventful and busy manner. Not because of what happened in Pakistan, although that's also important, or what's happening in Ukraine, but because India and the US had the fourth edition of their 2+2 ministerial meeting. 2+2, why? Because this is a forum where the defense minister and the foreign minister from either side together, they meet. So this is the fourth. Why defense and foreign ministers? Because this is meant to oversee this developing, evolving strategic partnership between the two most important democracies in the world. Now, just preceding this was also a virtual summit between Prime Minister Modi from India and President Joe Biden. Now, you've seen pro forma statements released by either side, the opening address by the Prime Minister and by the President. Those things are of public consumption, usually full of platitudes. Now, the important thing is that this round of 2+2 has taken place in the backdrop of what's happened in Ukraine. It's almost been 7 weeks. In fact, we are in the 7th week now of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, in the course of which we have seen that India and the US have not been fully on the same page on this issue. For example, US and its allies, NATO and elsewhere, even the other two Quad allies, that's Japan and Australia, they have voted in favor of all the resolutions that the Americans have supported against Russia. Or let me say, they voted in all the resolutions against Russia. India, on the other hand, has abstained. India has abstained, and that has led to a lot of complaints, particularly from the commentators, from the media in these countries, saying India is letting its own side down. India is not speaking up for democracies. India has, however, had a very nuanced stand. India has been underlining the need to preserve and protect and respect Ukraine's territorial integrity and sovereignty, but at the same time, not condemning Russia. Again, on sanctions against Russia, India's view is very qualified, because as we keep explaining to you, if 98%, 96% of all your tanks are of Russian origin, and if 72% of your fighter planes are of Russian origin, if 95% of your surface-to-air missiles to shoot down aircraft and missiles are of Russian origin, and if the flagship of your navy is of Russian origin and every flying asset on it is of Russian origin, there are limitations to how far you can go with immediate sanctions against Russia. Now, there's been a lot of speculation, suspicion, what will happen. Suspicion among those who might worry that, look, this can upset the strategic shift that India made, I would say, from 1980 onwards. Now, I'm not going into the history of that, but the fact is that when Mrs. Gandhi came back to power in 1980, she was uneasy, and that is a well-documented fact. She was quite uneasy for the way India was being forced to vote at the UN on the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. So it's not the first time Soviet Union, or now Russia, its inheritor of its legacy, they have put India to such a big moral test. 1979, they invaded Afghanistan, and really at that point, India had no choice but to vote in a manner that suited the Soviets. That means abstaining on most of those votes. Now, she was uneasy, and she reached out to Ronald Reagan at Cancun. That is a well-documented initiative on her part to break the ice with the Americans. She was trying to thaw what had frozen in 1971 in the Nixon-Kissinger period. After that, the progress has been very slow. Rajiv Gandhi made some movements, but once again, once he was in trouble, he blamed the Americans without directly naming them. But he said, "Wo log jo bahar se plan kar rahe hain, all those who are plotting against me from outside, hum unko nani yaad dila denge." Not very different from what Imran Khan was saying just the other day, blaming the Americans for all his problems. So America is the usual suspect in our countries. Now, I say 1991, because 1989 to 1991 is when the Cold War ended. And India had to figure out its place in this new world. So see, the first initiative was taken by Chandrasekhar. Chandrasekhar, who had a government with very few numbers, just 40 MPs of his own, supported by Congress from outside. And he, at that point, when the first Gulf War started in 1991, after Saddam had occupied Kuwait, he allowed American aircraft refueling facilities in India. These were aircraft mostly taking off from Diego Garcia and going towards the Gulf. As soon as that fact came out, there was a lot of noise in the Indian political system. It would have got the Congress also at that point quite uneasy. Then Narasimha Rao it is who came in the same year, 1991, who took many initiatives, the first of which was upgrading his relations with Israel. That was the first indication that India was shifting away from the Cold War, larger Cold War formulation of its foreign policy. Now, since then, India has had the pretense of non-alignment or still being part of a non-aligned movement, but increasingly, prime minister to prime minister, India and US, India and the Western world, particularly the US, have moved closer. And it's a consistent movement. You can say the graph started in 1980 somewhere here and moving at this pace and this pace and this pace. Then under Manmohan Singh, it became even steeper. Remember, it was in his first term that he signed the Indo-US nuclear deal. And then under Narendra Modi, it has become quite a vertical graph. So in that situation, there was also a concern, or on the other side, the critics, a hope maybe that this will finally remind India that America was not a friend or ally, that India's interests lay either with Soviet bloc, and somehow that Putin's Russia was the true inheritor of the Soviet legacy. So it was the new Soviet Union, and India had once again come back to that old fake non-alignment, but it was more or less an ally of the Soviet Union, but pretended to be non-aligned. I'm digressing, but this only came to my mind because Sonia Gandhi the other day, addressing her party leader, said, see, we have now realized the value of true non-alignment. The fact is, true non-alignment never existed, not after 1969, when Indira Gandhi signed the Treaty of Peace, Friendship and Cooperation, as it was called, with the Soviet Union. And every government in India over the past 40 years has tried to distance itself from that formulation of non-alignment, which is what's happened now. So the question was, will this stand the test of the Ukraine-Russia problem? That would India now be expected to completely be with the other allies, the Quad allies in particular, or would India still have the space? I'm not saying allowed. No country is allowed. Countries make their choices. India makes its choice. India is too big and too powerful and too important a country for other countries to say, you shall not be allowed to do this in terms of its sovereign choices. But there is now, it's evident from this 2+2 that there is adequate understanding of where India is coming from. So, for example, even if you saw the big headline event and the video that's gone viral is a short statement by our foreign minister, S. Jaishankar, where he says, if you're talking about our oil purchases from Russia, we buy some energy from Russia, but what we buy in a month is perhaps less than what Europe buys in an afternoon. That's true and everybody knows it. So once again, it's not as if the whole world or India's own allies are putting the gun on India's head and saying, listen, you stop buying any oil from Russia or I pull the trigger. No, first of all, nobody can do it. And second, that is not the situation because Europe is buying a lot. Yes, there will be an issue when India buys large amounts of deep discounted oil because that can be seen by India's allies as profiting from an unfair war. Or if India becomes party to alternate payment mechanisms to get around the sanctions. But we haven't yet got there. So when we get there, we'll see what happens. Now, if you get this noise out, see what have these meetings achieved. And you know, when diplomats write stuff, mostly it looks like platitudes and repetition. That's why you have to read very, very carefully between the lines. And for heaven's sake, don't watch what the TV is saying. right? So on the one hand, there is TV saying, I saw one channel even saying, oh, will Biden now concede to Modi? Now, these talks don't take place like that. And large nations, large powers don't deal with each other, don't interact like that. So what I can do is, the best I can do is read these statements. Now, you can see that Indian statements, both ministers, S. Jayashankar and Rajnath Singh. Rajnath Singh, if anything, is even more cautious than any diplomat. They have completely avoided mentioning Russia in any situation. Even the readout of the Prime Minister and President's summit meeting, Indian readout has no mention of Russia or China. The American readout has a mention of Russia. So Russia was discussed, but obviously Indians don't want to state it. But unless the Americans had India's concurrence, they would not have stated in their readout that Russia was discussed. Similarly, in the statements, opening statements, and also at the press conference, by the American ministers, that is Secretary of Defense and Secretary of State, both Russia and China are mentioned. And that's the important part, because even from the Indian side, in none of the statements is China mentioned. Even in the joint statement also, they are walking over eggshells. India does not like to directly name or blame China anywhere. Now, a lot of people say that, look, what have the Americans done for you? Chinese are giving you trouble in Ladakh. Americans haven't even spoken out in your favor. The fact is, Americans have spoken out a lot more. Now, definitely, you can argue, and I will also argue, that they are doing it not in our interest. They are doing it in their interest. But remember the national interest we wrote 3 weeks back, that in foreign policy, every country acts in its own national interest. So if you see this statement, after all the regular stuff like science, technology, vaccines, cybersecurity, climate change, infrastructure, space, there's a mention of critical and emerging technologies. And then when it talks about defense, in fact, the longest section in the joint statement is about defense. When they talk about defense and strategic partnership, then they say that, look, this is a comprehensive global strategic partnership which encompasses all areas of science, technology, cybersecurity, and space. And then it goes on to say that India and America now are major defense partners. That's very important. And it says the statement, they will coordinate closely. There is an Indo-US joint tech group which keeps meeting and which is studying evolving new defense domains, including space and artificial intelligence. All these are important things. Important things are not kitne tank aur mil rahe or kitne anti-tank missile aur mil rahe. These are the important things, because that's how warfare will happen now. This is the changing nature of warfare. Again, the two sides noted their progress in what is called as BECA. Now, BECA, we had done an earlier Cut the Clutter episode, and maybe this Sunday, I will share with you once again an edited, shortened version of it just for reference, because that was some time back. So BECA is one of the agreements, military slash strategic agreements that India and US have signed lately, and that is Basic Exchange and Cooperation Agreement. Now, Basic Exchange and Cooperation Agreement actually involves a very high-level exchange of information and lots of other details. I'd recommend to you, please watch that episode this Sunday. That will give you a much better background instead of my going on and on right now. Then they say, and these are again interested in, these are again interesting formulations, combined maritime forces, that India should be a part of combined maritime forces task force of essentially the Quad allies and the Western allies in Indo-Pacific. And then it mentions all the exercises that go on, Yudha Abhyas, Vajraprahar, COPE India, Red Flag. These are the two Air Force exercises, COPE India is in India, Red Flag is in America. Then very significantly aligned, both sides commit to deepening cooperation between special forces. You know what that means, because special forces need special equipment, special technologies, special ability to use artificial intelligence and information technology, training, etc., doctrines, etc., etc. Two sides are also talking about strengthening DTTI, that is Defense Technology and Trade Initiative. And then there is a lot about joint production, where American companies and American technology could come in to help to participate in Make in India projects. There, the mentions I find interesting again. First of all, co-develop air-launched unarmed vehicles, important. That is unarmed vehicles that are launched by aircraft. Number two, counter unmanned aerial systems. That means when someone else is using unarmed vehicles, UAVs against you or drones against you, how do you counter them? That is the new technology, because that's how warfare functions. There are electronic measures, electronic countermeasures, then electronic countermeasures, and then it goes on like that. So this is counter unmanned aerial systems. Then the joint development of what is called as ISTAR systems, ISTAR. What does that stand for? Intelligence, surveillance, target acquisition, and reconnaissance. So these platforms have to be developed, and these will be developed jointly. Also, the two sides are going to sign industrial security agreements. That is to make sure that no side has any anxieties. What happens if I share my critical technologies with the other side? This works obviously more to the benefit of India. And there are two other things which look like, I would say, sweeteners given to India. One, that US Navy ships, particularly of the Sea Lift Command, these are not combat ships. These are ships that carry a large number of troops and tanks and equipment. So ships of the US Sea Lift Command, Maritime Sea Lift Command, they will choose one or more of Indian ports for their maintenance, repair, etc., etc., or their mid-voyage repairs, because they're making a long voyage, they need repairs on the way, so they can do it on an Indian port. Now, having said this, I'd mentioned China earlier. Now, the mention of China, if you read the statement by Lloyd Austin, who is the US Secretary of Defense, that I find very, very, very significant. So he says, across the region, PRC is creating new challenges, urgent and mounting challenges to our shared vision. That is India and the US's shared vision, by way of seeking to redefine other states' sovereignty. And then he again says, and I quote from his statement, Beijing is eroding the security of the Indo-Pacific region from its construction of dual-use infrastructure on your border. That's on our border. Once again, India is very cagey. India is not complaining because you don't want to poke the Chinese in the eye. But the Americans have no such problem. Beijing is eroding the security of the Indo-Pacific region from its construction of dual-use infrastructure on your border to its unlawful claim in South China Seas. And Lloyd Austin says, we will continue to stand alongside you as you defend your sovereign interests. Now, okay, you might say, American ne ye to kahani ki, I will come and fight for you. Nobody comes and fights for you. Ukrainians are fighting for themselves. A sovereign nation has to fight for itself. You need solidarity. You need sharing of information. You might need equipment. You might need all kinds of diplomatic support, right? That is what big nations do for each other. They don't send their armies. They are not expected to send their armies to defend others. Plus, India is too powerful, too strong, too self-respecting, and too confident to need any such help from anybody. Then he goes on and he mentions about Russian invasion of Ukraine, which obviously India does not talk about. And he says in his statement, Lloyd Austin says, as Indian armed forces become more jointly integrated, our militaries will work together across domains of potential conflict from seas to cyberspace. Now, what does all of that mean? You can translate it. I don't have to do it for you. Now, the other thing that I find very significant in this, and I think you will see a story from Snehesh Alex Philip, our defense editor, in the course of time on this, that is a new agreement that India and US have agreed to sign now. And that is called SSAA. All these are interesting acronyms which will keep featuring in our lives, like LEMOA, CATSA, COMCASA. CATSA is trouble, COMCASA is not trouble. Now, SSAA is Space Situational Awareness Agreement. Now, that is what India and the US are going to sign. That is an agreement US has signed with many countries. I was Googling it and I found they've signed one with Japan on this, and I'm sharing with you a copy. You can see that. I don't know exactly how our agreement will be, but it'll be something like that. Now, I've also checked out the definition of space situational awareness, and you will see that on the screen. I will also share a link from Space Foundation for you for better understanding. So you can see where the two countries are headed. This is basically so one country can share with the other all information of floating objects in outer space, particularly debris, etc. So what you say, what you call debris could be weapons, anything that threatens your satellites or your assets in space. You now share information on those. That's a very significant agreement. Once again, Lloyd Austin, you can expect a defense person, a general, to talk a lot more directly than diplomats. Diplomats are much too cautious, unless a diplomat is Pompeo, which Blinken isn't. He says PRC, that is People's Republic of China, is seeking to refashion the region and the institutional system more broadly in ways that serve its authoritarian interests. Right? That's really like giving gully to the Chinese. But as we operationalize our defense agreements and take our cooperation to the next level, I believe that we can sustain and strengthen a favorable balance of power in the region. So if you see all of this, then it doesn't look like there is a lot of tutu meme going on there, or there is a lot of aapne ye kya kiya, how could you do to me, et to India. Because, you know, as we keep on saying again and again, nations act in their self-interest. And the larger the nation, the stronger that commitment to self-interest, and also larger the stakes. And that is what comes out of these meetings. So once again, these meetings are not about why did you buy so many more barrels of crude oil from Russia, or why did you abstain at the last vote. These are about the most substantive aspect of India-US strategic partnership.